Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Go Podcast. My name is Blair.
And I'm Burnsy. And we want to welcome you to season two of the Dads Group podcast. We're so excited because this go round, we've got a whole bunch of new guests, new hosts even, and we've got some awesome conversations coming your way, all about bringing experience and expertise to the table to help us all become better dads.
Exactly. So for those that are listening to this podcast for the first time, a little bit of background for us. Burnsy and I, we work for a nonprofit organization called Dads Group. Our goal as an organization is to ensure that new and expecting dads have access to some amazing support programs and resources for themselves, their partners, and their children during the perinatal period. Yes, we talk about the perinatal period, but this podcast is for any dads, anyone that identifies as a father, this is for you.
Yeah, so, Dad's Group is about helping fathers and helping families. And what we know from experience, but also from research, is that when dads are active and engaged in parenting, that makes such a significant contribution to family. It has massive outcomes. So what we want to do is help you as a father or help you as a listener so that we can help out families right across the country, I guess.
Yeah, exactly right. And we have listeners right across the world, which is really encouraging, actually, because we're just some ordinary blokes having a bit of a yarn.
That's it.
But that is the beauty of Dad's Group. Is that we're nothing special. It is honestly just having the conversation. And that's what we do in our Dad's Groups around Australia. That's what we do in our digital Dad's Group sessions. And that's even Burnsy in our friendship is essentially that, is just we catch up, we have a conversation about what we're struggling with. We normalize the struggle because once we actually understand that, my frustrations or the way that I responded to something towards my kids is not unique to me, then we can stop beating ourselves up, right? We're like, oh no, this struggle is real. This is not just unique to me. So give ourselves a little bit of grace and to be like, all right, dust it off. That was a bad action. We're not excusing the action. We're just normalizing the feelings. And then we can be like, all right, well, let's move forward in progressing and being the dad that we want to be. Because if we're not on this journey, if we're not being intentional with our growth in fatherhood, then it's so hard to rock up and be the dad that we want to be because we keep on beating ourselves up and keep on having these expectations for ourselves that just aren't realistic. So this is a lot of what Dad's Group is, and a lot of what we're trying to achieve here in these podcasts is just to have the conversation. We're going to have some amazing people coming on to host with us this season, which I'm really rapt about. And we've got people that are going to be interviewing psychologists and counselors to give us some really sweet tips and tricks. We've got sports journalists coming on interviewing sports stars and what that balance is like for a very demanding career and to be a dad. We have people in the business industry as well discussing the same things, trying to balance that work-life balance, which is extremely hard for a lot of us, we know. But today's episode, I'm really pumped about. I had a listen earlier, and this, I'm going to hand over to you, Burnsy, because you actually hosted this interview, which I was rapt about, mate. So yeah, over to you for an intro.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of dads, if not all dads, would have had that experience where they picked up a book, when they found out they were becoming a dad, or they started listening to a podcast, or they were just trying to find information from wherever they could. And for my wife and I, we found a podcast called the Aware Parenting Podcast, and that was co-founded by the lady we interviewed for this episode, Lael Stone. Lael's done everything in terms of like children and families and, sort of supporting families. She's been a birth educator. She's done trauma work. She's been counselor. She's done all sorts of things. But then she started this work in Aware Parenting. And what that is a model of parenting or a framework. And in this interview, we really dig into like the practicals of how to be an aware parent based on this model. And what I really love about this interview, besides like Lael just brings so much gold and so many tips and tricks, was just that she gave us so many ways in this interview of, as a dad, how do you contribute to your family? So much gold here. Really encourage you to take some time, create some space to listen through to this one, because I think there's a lot here that's going to be helpful for dads, for new and expecting dads, for dads a bit further on the journey. And really hope that you enjoy this interview with Lael Stone. Well, Lael, welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
it's our custom with Dad's Group to start every meeting and every podcast by checking in. So I'd like to ask you, Lael, how are you going out of 10 today?
I'm about I'd probably say I'm an 8 or a 9 today. I'm feeling pretty good. Awesome. I've got some exciting things bubbling away, which are exciting and a little bit terrifying. And I'm feeling the good buzz of life today. You've caught awesome. Me on a great day. So yeah, I'm great. Thank you.
That's awesome. I think I've just popped back up to a 10 just in the little bit that we've been talking to each other. So the energy is tangible. It's vibrant. I'm you have done a lot of incredible things in your career, but what I'd like to start with is just to hear a bit of your story. So I wonder if you could introduce us to your family and to, your home life a little bit without going too deep, I guess. But, if you could sort of share a bit about your family, who they are, what you love about your family.
Beautiful. Nice question. I am married to a beautiful man, Mike. We've been together for, I think, around nearly 25 years now. So we had our 21st wedding anniversary last week, which I have to say was very beautiful because on the day I'm like, what are you doing today, honey? He's like, oh, I've got work. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working. And I'm like, oh, it's anniversary. Maybe we'll go out to dinner tomorrow night because I've got to go to, into town to do, I had a talk planned at a school. So I had to go and do a talk. And so he's like, yeah, no worries. And I'm like, can you plan something for dinner for tomorrow night? And he's like, yeah, sure. Anyway, then I'm driving up to my talk and my 15-year-old daughter rings me and she's like, Mum, just make sure you come straight home from the talk. It's like an hour and a half away because Dad wants to have a nice dessert for you. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's really sweet. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll come straight home. Anyway, so I'm at this talk to, 60 or 70 parents and, a picture of my family comes up and I'm like, oh, it's my 21st anniversary and I'm hanging out with you guys and everyone laughs. Anyway, I finish the talk and I'm talking to people as I'm leaving and I'm walking out and then I look up and there's my husband standing in front of me and I'm like, and I could not compute, like my brain was like, hang on, what are you doing here? And I'm like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I'm here to take you out to dinner. Everybody, all the women are like, oh, that's so romantic. And I was just like, what? But like, we live so far away. And all I can do is go, but did you bring your car? Now we've got two cars. He's like looking at me going, shut up, Lael. Just enjoy this moment. And he's like, come and get in the car. And it was so beautiful. And then he whisked me off to our favorite restaurant. And then he'd booked a hotel room in the city for the night. And there was just so many surprises. And all my kids were in on it. And it was really beautiful. And I think after 21 years of marriage or being together for 25 years, it's a relationship's hard, when you've been with someone for a long time. And I absolutely love that he brings that spontaneity and magic. And I just kind of giggled all night. Like it was so beautiful. So yeah, he's a special man. He loves a bit of romance. He's a romantic at heart. So that's my beautiful husband, Mike. We have three amazing children. My son, Kai, he's almost 23. Yeah. And then I have a 19-year-old daughter, Indy, and then a 15-year-old daughter, Tali. And so I would say, my children have 100% shaped my work that I've done in the world. I started many, many years ago working in birth, really because I'd had a tricky birth experience with my first and then had a really powerful, positive experience with my second. And that really just changed something in me to want to empower others to have really great birth experiences. And then as my kids grew, I moved more into parenting work. And then as they became teenagers, then I ended up teaching sex education to teens for 5 years. And so as my children have grown, so has my work and I think my interest. So I am very grateful for my family. We've now reached this next juncture in our life where we moved out of the city about a year ago now. And, my middle daughter was like, I don't want to come move to a small, coastal town. She just lived through COVID as a teenager. And she's like, I want to go to bars and, sing in a band. And, I'm like, yeah. So she moved out of home, which was a massive, change in your whole journey as a family. When one of your kids leaves and my older son does a lot of traveling. So he's kind of comes and goes. He's not here as often. So I find that we're now just kind of a family with one child, with my youngest, who's currently in year 10 and just navigating that next phase of life, really, which I know it just seems so far away when you've got little toddlers and babies. It's just like, you can't even fathom. You're just like, oh, I just want a full night's sleep or I just want to go to the toilet on my own. And then there's this next phase where you find yourself on weekends like, oh, what are we going to do? Like, like, you know, it's a whole other thing. I think all those years of kids sport and all the service and the servitude that you do, and then it comes to another different place. So that's the season of my life and I'm in right now. It's a whole other piece.
I love hearing that. It gives me a bit of hope, actually, just hearing that you can go to the bathroom without being followed. Or even last night, my wife and I were just trying to have a tub of ice cream on the couch. And our little fella, our little 17-month-old, just would not go to bed until he could see what we were doing. So,
Those years feel really long and can often feel really relentless when you've got little people and you're just of service to them. But I often say to parents I work with, it gets easier and it changes, and then it gets harder again and then it changes. And it's, you know, we grow through each stage as we get there. And it can feel very intense though when you're right in the thick of it.
Yeah, definitely. And you hinted there at just some of the work that you've done very modestly, but you've been a childbirth educator, a doula, a counsellor. You were a calm birth facilitator. You created the Connection Program, which was the sex education that you talked about. You work with the Resilience Project. You are an Aware Parenting instructor and started a podcast and co-wrote a book, and you've started a primary school even. So you've covered just about every stage of the spectrum of a young person, I think. And so it's really incredible to have you here on our podcast and speaking with our audience, you know, being able to speak to all those different stages and seasons. But I guess what I'd really like to ask is what has really fueled that work? You talked about the influence of your own family, but I guess what's the passion or the vision behind all of that work that you've done with families and with parents and children?
I think, well, firstly, I mean, look, I would say that any work I've done has probably been out of my own deep need to raise my kids with as much awareness and consciousness as possible. So my inquiry into nearly everything I've done has come from how can I do this in a way which leaves my kids with not as much baggage as what most adults have, right? How do we do it so that they're well-adjusted, fabulous humans in the world? So I think they've always been my kind of driver to learn more, to do it in a way that is conscious. And, you know, I say this all the time when I do a talk, no matter what book I've read or what I've studied, it is the countless hours of listening to my children or playing with them or being present or navigating the hard stuff or owning all my own crap that comes up that has actually taught me more than anything. It's being in the fire with them. You know, I think you can read all this stuff and you can study things, but it's actually in practice that is where the embodiment comes. So I feel like a lot of the work was driven by, I just want to be a better human and I want to raise my kids with as much awareness as possible. And so I realized pretty early on that unless I sort out my own stuff, that's not going to happen. So I did a lot of inquiry into my own work. And then I think it moved from then just wanting to create more harmony in families. And I saw this from the very, very beginning when I worked in birth, of the impact of a traumatic birth, what that can set up in the family unit, you know, in those first years of parenting, which we know is so intense. And when a family's dealing with trauma from birth, and that's huge, and there's often not enough support for that. So I saw it right from the very beginning. And then we move into the toddler years, and then that can feel really intense. And then when we start in the schooling system, which again then just adds a whole other other weight to repression and to not often getting our needs met. So I think as I looked at the whole progression, and you know, and then in the teenage years, I really kind of come back to, well, how do we help our beautiful kiddos right from the very beginning grow up to be healthy adults? How do we do that? And I think that has really guided and shaped everything I've done in my work so that we can have healthier humans in the world, because I think that's what it's about. And when we are healthier humans mentally and physically, you know, we're kinder to each other, we're compassionate, we don't harm others, we don't harm the earth. you know, we want to do good by mankind. Like it, the ripple effect is huge. If we look at the mess that the world is in, well, I really do believe this. If we want to change it, well, it starts in the family. And it starts with right from the very beginning, you know, how we support families to feel connected, to feel safe, to unpack their stories and their trauma so that we don't then just pass it on to our kids.
Absolutely. And I think you've hit on something there that has been a really big thing for me. And I don't know for a lot of dads in terms of if that relationship hasn't been strong with their father, how do I not create that same experience? And I think that word trauma is so key to parents today being able to, as you say, like be able to raise their kids with as little, you know, sort of impact, negative impact as possible. So I wonder if you could speak to that word trauma. What does trauma mean? Like what constitutes a trauma? Because I think it's a word that does get thrown around a lot and maybe we miss what lies underneath. So I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit louder.
So, I mean, I talk about trauma, I guess, in a few different places. So we can have, and I'll talk in the context of children, right? And so if you're listening, you can think about it as yourself, like as that child for a minute. We can have what we call complex trauma, which is where there is constant threat to a child in the sense of not being taken care of. So that can be neglect. It can be abuse in the family, physical, sexual, emotional abuse. It can be, you know, that there's not enough money and there's often a lot of worry going on. So the child is always on kind of high alert of, are we going to be okay? It can be being homeless. It can be constant stuff that often happens for a child where there's a lot of unsafe. And so there's not those kind of fundamental needs of shelter and emotional safety and comfort and connection. So that complex trauma is really about often a lot about neglect or abuse, those kind of genres that come up. And so that's one level that we can often see. Then we can have things like acute traumas, which are things that happen to us that are really scary events, like car accidents. Or someone dying, or we get really, really sick and we're hospitalized, or we witness something horrific. And they're often those traumas in the moment where we get a shock in our body and then we don't have the opportunity to process what has actually happened for us. We kind of get band-aided with, it's okay and you're fine now, but it actually still lives in the body. And then it pops up at other times where there's situations where people feel powerless or they feel threatened, or there's a similar energy to whatever happened with that acute trauma. So we've got that. And then, you know, one of the big things I talk about is perhaps another level of trauma is what I call connection trauma, which is where we kind of grown up in a family which was very loving and we got food to eat and we were safe in our shelter, but we weren't necessarily given the connection that we needed. And that may have looked like when we got upset or angry, we might have been shushed or we might have been sent to our rooms until we're happy again. It might have been that, you know, we didn't really have any loving boundaries in our family. And so we often felt like, does anybody really care here? And we keep pushing, trying to find a boundary for someone to hold for us. It could be that that anger and upset was never allowed in our family. It was always criticized or we were mocked or made fun of when we got upset. And so we learned from an early age that it's not okay to feel. And so, you know, these are subtle traumas that happen to all of us. I'll just say most of us have them, where we just didn't get our needs met emotionally from our parents. And it's not our parents' fault. Our parents were doing the best job they know how. They were probably doing better than what was done to them at the time. And they were just kind of going through life trying to keep their head above water. And so it's often, and it doesn't mean that they don't absolutely love you and care for you and all that kind of stuff. But as humans, we have this fundamental need for attachment and connection. And really, you know, I've worked with thousands of adults. The wound that often always comes back is to this same place, which is, am I enough? Like, do you love me just the way I am? And for many of us, we are taught from a very young age, I need you to behave this way in order to fit into a box, in order to make me happy, in order for it to look okay. And so many of us learn from a young age to deny our feelings and to be good boys and good girls in order to keep someone else happy. We often end up kind of betraying what we really feel or need in those times in order just to keep the peace, or because it's not acceptable, or because we want approval. And they're the kind of little traumas that I think most of us carry into adulthood. And we learn to manage them, right? We learn to repress our feelings in ways that are probably not healthy, which means, you know, we binge watch too much Netflix, or we're addicted to our phones, or we work too much, or we eat too much ice cream, or drink too much beer, or, you know, we do the things to numb our feelings when they come because that's what we've learned to do. Or it turns into anger, and sometimes then it becomes projected onto others, and we're not often taught how to navigate our feelings and emotions in healthy ways. And so therefore, as children, we would have learned to shut them down or to, you know, project them onto someone else. And so then, you know, we can still grow up to be functioning adults, but emotionally we are often quite stunted, or perhaps it doesn't feel safe to feel feelings. And then what happens is we have children, right? And then our beautiful children come along who have big feelings and upsets, and we get massively triggered by it because we have a story that says, well, it's not okay to feel like that. You know, when I was a little kid, I got shut down for feeling like that. Or or we can get really angry when a child isn't doing what we want or is really upset, because it taps us into feeling out of control, because we were never allowed to feel that, or we may have got smacked because we were angry or upset. So there's the cycle continues and continues and continues. And I think, you know, our work as adults is to be curious around our reactions and to be curious around the different traumas that we've had in life, to see if they turn up in our life and where they turn up, and then what we can do with them. Because as we've kind of touched on, the cycle will just continue, you know, until it takes one person in that lineage to go, actually, this doesn't feel good, or I don't want to speak to my child the way my father spoke to me, or I don't want to, you know, smack them when they get upset, or I don't want to, you know, have this story that says you must be the best at all costs. And then that puts a massive pressure on, you know, my child to excel. So I think it's an inquiry. It's always an invitation, an inquiry into, all right, well, where is the stories? Where did they come from? What do they mean for me? And what am I projecting onto my kids?
Yeah. And what I love about that exploration of trauma is it is an invitation to realize that it doesn't have to be those, you know, those big things as you talked about. Like, it can be instances. And I think particularly for dads, as men, where that emotional vulnerability is still not culturally acceptable, it can be really hard to acknowledge that, hey, actually, I went through something or that impacts me. And as you say, yeah, you then have kids, and a baby, an infant, their way of processing emotion is crying, is volume, essentially. And if you haven't created that curiosity, that awareness of trauma, it can be very triggering. And I think it is, I guess a really great invitation for, you know, our dads listening to this, and partners, families, to really bring that curiosity to understand, you know, the breadth of trauma, that it doesn't just have to be those big things, and that you can be impacted by that. And it is okay to have that impact in your life. Like, it doesn't have to be that comparison of, well, that person had a much worse life than me, so why am I complaining or hurting from this? But actually, it is hurt. And yeah, creating that awareness is so important. I think, you know, like, hearing all of that, it can be really intimidating, you know, and like, that we carry traumas and that potentially our children will be impacted by traumas. So I'd like to dive in now to your work in aware parenting, because I think it delivers a lot of tools and a lot of that curiosity that can help with approaching trauma. So as I mentioned before, you started a podcast with your colleague Marion called the Aware Parenting Podcast. You co-authored a book with Marion called Raising Resilient and Compassionate Children. When I first heard of aware parenting, I didn't realize it was a thing. I just thought it was a really nice descriptor about how we can come about parenting. But as I engage more with your content, learn more about, well, actually, there is a model and a framework, and it's a whole thing. It gave me a lot of really great tools, and it's given our family a lot of really great tools. So I wonder if you could explain a bit about aware parenting, its context, what are some of its foundations, going from there, how can we then start to utilize it in terms of approaching these traumas?
Yeah. So Where Parenting is actually created by Dr. Aletha Salter. So she's a Swiss-American psychologist. And really, I think Aletha Salter was so ahead of her time in just her theory and understanding around children and connection and trauma and healing. So her first book, The Aware Baby, I think she wrote nearly 25, 30 years ago. And that's where I found her work. I came across that book, The Aware Baby, which really I stumbled across it because it was about helping babies heal from trauma. And I'd had an experience like that with my third child. And I was really looking for a way to, how do I help my baby not carry this full-on experience that we've had? So the three kind of key components of Aware Parenting is attachment, so close attunement to our children. So it's things like breastfeeding and wearing your baby on your body and having them close when you sleep and just attuning to their needs, really. It's just, it's being connected, which I love that many more parents are naturally doing now. You know, we see that it is really important to attune to our baby's needs and not leave them alone to cry, and that it's not so much about schedules but about tuning in to where our babies are. The second key component of Aware Parenting is non-punitive discipline, which means not using punishments and rewards to get our kids to do what we want them to do. And always when I say that, parents are like, yeah, but if you don't do that, what do you do? Like, how do you get your kids to cooperate? So there's other beautiful ways that we work with. So non-punitive discipline is really around not using that power over model of, and if you don't do this, I'll take something away from you, right? Like, it's really about using power and threat, or it's the flip side of that, which is kind of the same thing, which is if you do what I want, then I'll reward you with something. So, and that's pretty much what our culture is set up on. It's very much the behaviorism paradigm, which we've been around for a really long time. And that's how most adults I work with were raised, in that behaviorism paradigm. So we've got that. So we've got the attachment, we've got the non-punitive discipline. And then the third key component of Aware Parenting is about helping children heal from stress and trauma. And the way that we do that is through holding space for their feelings and emotions, which sounds very, you know, simple in its message, but actually can be very, very tricky. And a lot of the times that can be really tricky because, connected to what I said earlier, most of us have no emotional embodiment of being actually heard when we were upset. And often when I say to adults, well, do you have a memory of a child, as a child, of being really angry or being really upset about something, and your parent just sitting there calmly holding space for you, saying, I hear you. I know this sounds really big, like, let it out. I'm with you. And you got to express all your feelings and you just offloaded all the bigness of it. And then you came back into balance. And then they were there with open arms and they gave you a big hug and then you moved on. And it's rare that I meet adults that go, yeah, that was what my parents did, right? Most of the time it wasn't. We were told to stop being upset. We might have been ignored. We might have been sent to our rooms. We might have been smacked. We might have been made fun of, all those things that our parents responded to. And again, purely because most of that behaviorism paradigm is taught to them, which is that, well, when you're good, I'll reward you. And when you're bad, I'll take something away. And behavior and emotions and upset and anger has been seen as a bad thing for a really, really long time. Whereas anger and upset and sad are not bad things. They're just feelings, and we all have them. And when we bring it back to things like trauma, is one of the ways we release trauma in our bodies is by shaking and crying and moving in ways that kind of move the adrenaline and the fear from our bodies. It's also through laughing and can be through playing as well. Mm-hmm. And so I guess when we look at something like Aware Parenting, it comes back to, you know, some other key components, which is about giving children choice and autonomy where possible, because as humans, we all love choice and autonomy, right? It's amazing what happens when we feel like we've got choice. When we have no choice, what happens? We get angry. We've just lived through that through COVID, right? Yeah. That was big around choice and autonomy. A lot of feelings came up for a lot of people. So choice and autonomy is a huge thing that we look at as well. How do we give children choice and autonomy? And the way I explain it too is about being able to always be tuning into your child to see where they're at, so that when your little person walks into the room, I often invite parents to kind of scan their kids to just be like, well, where are they at the moment? Mm-hmm. Are they what I call in balance or out of balance? So when a child's in balance, you know that they're feeling relaxed in their bodies. They're usually, you know, happy and chatty or singing. You know, they'll play kindly with their sibling. You'll ask them to do something and they usually do it. You know, we know that a child's in balance when they're feeling good in their bodies. When they're out of balance, It's when they walk into the room and, you know, they punch their brother in the head as they walk by, and then you ask them to do something and they ignore you, or they yell at you of why they have to do everything. And, you know, you can see in their little bodies that there's tension, that there's feelings there for them. And so what we've been taught, I think, for a long time is in those moments, what do? We should come down hard on that child. Don't hurt your brother that way. And that is not all right. And don't speak to me that way. And in those moments, we need discipline. It's not okay to be like that. And I think aware parenting, what it does is it asks us to look behind the behavior and go, I wonder why they're feeling like that. There's always a reason for behavior, always, for us as adults, for children, for everybody. And so when we can move into a place of curiosity to go, there's something going on there, then we are opening up a way of being able to meet that child with whatever their feelings are. Now, that might be that child is feeling upset and angry because they haven't seen you all day. And actually what they need is just some time with you, and they need a cuddle, or maybe they need food, or, you know, there's a need. And when we meet that need, then they're often back in balance. Yeah. Or sometimes there is built up feelings and stresses from their day. You know, perhaps they spent a whole day at school where they've been told what to do all day, and that feels really frustrating and overwhelming, and they come home and they're looking for a safe place to offload those feelings, and you are the safest place. So when you ask them to do something, it tips them over the edge, and the next minute all their feelings come pouring out. So perhaps it's that. Perhaps it's that we see, you know, there's something that's really scared them, or they're anxious about something or something going on, and what they need is some more connection and playfulness, or they need just a limit to be held so they get to offload those feelings. Mm-hmm. And every parent has experienced this, is that your child can have a massive meltdown over something because you gave them the wrong color cup, or because they think their sisters have more ice cream, or because you said no to going to a party, or whatever it is. And then they have these massive outbursts and big, big feelings because they're pushing up against your no or whatever you've given them. And then they have a big cry and they let out all the feelings, and then they come back into balance. And either they often share with you what they're worried about, or they move on and they're pretty happy because the body's just reset itself. And so I think what aware parenting does is it really is about learning to look behind the behavior and be curious. Our children are always responding to their environment. And our job as a parent is not to try and fix it, and it's not to kind of make it all happy all the time. Our job is just to be curious and to meet whatever comes with that child. You know, anger is not bad. Sad is not bad. You know, they're just feelings and they're just emotions. And for a long time, I think we've been taught that they're not okay and we should just all be feeling better and happy. But here's the issue: when we don't actually express them in healthy ways, then they sit in our bodies, they explode in other ways when we don't want them to. They can turn up as illness, they can turn up as a lot of resentment, a lot of unhappiness, you know, can turn into anxiety, depression, all those kind of messages. Is learning to be okay with feelings and emotions is one of the greatest things we can do, because as we do that, we model it to our children. Our children learn that it's okay to feel. That develops emotional intelligence. And then what we have is we have a whole lot more humans out in the world connected to themselves, not blaming others, you know, not projecting their stuff onto other people. That's where we create healthy humans.
That just blew my mind a little bit. And I think the part that really stands out for me, and I think the part that will help a lot of dads, particularly new and expecting dads, is that looking behind the behavior. And particularly when you've got an infant, like, you know, as a dad, if things get tough, you can go catch up with a mate, have a coffee or a beer, or, you know, go kick a footy or whatever it might be. But an infant or a baby can't do that. Like, a baby screams or cries or flops down on the floor face first, whatever it might be. And I think it's so helpful, again, like, particularly because men have come into this culture where that emotional vulnerability isn't okay. I think it's helpful for the dads hearing this to say, actually, what's going on behind this? What's really going on here? And I think helpful too, not just in your relationship with your child, but relationships with everyone. Like, constantly, I know my wife and I, like, we have to pause and go, okay, what actually is going on for you here? Because it's not just about the dishes not being done, or is it? So I wonder.
Totally.
I wonder, like, you know, that's a really that's a great starting place in terms of this framework of aware parenting. What are some other like sort of initial steps that our dads can take in terms of creating that aware parenting within their own parenting and fathering?
Sorry, you cut out for a second then. Can you say that question again?
Yeah, I just wonder if there are other sort of quick wins or first steps that dads can take in terms of trying to implement aware parenting, well, not implement, but bring that curiosity that comes with aware parenting.
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, my first thing is always this: be curious, don't be reactive, right? So when your child walks into the room and they're having a hard time, we got to be mindful that our thoughts don't go to, oh God, what's wrong with them now? Or why are they doing this? Or why are they making my life hard? Like, can you pause for a second and just get curious and go, oh, I wonder what's going on for them? Mm-hmm. And then we can meet a child with, hey man, is there something going on for you? Do you need something? Like, do you need some food or what are you frustrated about? Mm-hmm. And then the second piece, which is vital, and this is like, if you only take away one thing from what I'm saying, and anybody listening, please let it be this: just listen, right? We often listen to fix, we don't listen to hear. And as humans, what we all deeply desire is to be heard. We all have a fundamental need just for someone to go, gosh, tell me more, that sounds really big. And so when your child starts coming and going, it's not fair, Charlie took my toys and then he did this and then he did that, and what do we want to do? We want to jump into, oh, but it's fine, mate, you've got to share your toys and you've got to do this and you've got to do that, instead of actually taking a breath and going, oh God, that sounds hard. Yeah, well, tell me more. And we actually pause and we let Charlie offload how upset it feels that he's got a younger brother that takes his stuff, because he's right. It's frustrating when your younger brother takes your stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So we listen, and then we listen some more. And here's the beautiful thing about children, and I know this from working for teenagers for a long time, all they want, particularly in those 10 years, is for a parent to listen. They want to know that a parent is a safe place to come with their big feelings. And you know, when your kids are little, yeah, there's big problems and, you know, and we're dealing with sharing and we're dealing with, you know, I didn't get more ice cream and all this stuff. But in the teenage years, we're dealing with things like drugs and alcohol and sex and self-worth and body image. And we want our kids to come to us with that stuff, right? So you've got to make it safe enough for them to come to you, which means you've got to learn to listen well. Don't be in that moment coming in with a fix as to why, what they should do or how they do it better. Is just listen. And this is beautiful practice when our kids are little, to actually just take a moment and pause and listen and let the person just speak. And then you might say, you know, is there anything else or whatever, you know, they've got. And then at the end, you might say to them, now, do you want a suggestion or did you want me to just listen? Now, if that person's like, I just want you to listen, even if you have the best suggestion on earth, you can't offer it. You have to just listen. Because as humans, we will ask for help if we want it. And particularly with children, they need to know it's safe to ask for help. And the way that they learn it's safe to ask for help is by knowing that they're heard and they're being listened to. So the simple things is to start with listening, right? Not so much fixing, just listening. And the next piece we want to move into is, if there is big feelings and emotions, about not making them wrong, just going, hey, here's a buildup of stuff that's been brewing. And can I take a deep breath in this moment? Can I get really calm and anchored in my body and just meet what is present here, which is, you are so mad because your brother took your stuff. I get it, mate. Let it out. I'm going to keep us safe. And it doesn't mean we don't have boundaries. Boundaries are really important, but how we set boundaries is important. A boundary when we are yelling and screaming at our kids is not a healthy boundary. That usually means we're out of control, right? And we're out of balance. We need a break. A healthy boundary comes from a place where we're calm and centered and we say, that's a no, mate. I'm not willing for you to do that. But you can tell me how you feel, but it's a no. And most of us, again, were not modeled healthy boundaries at all. We were modeled yelling and screaming, particularly from that authoritarian male figure, or we had permissive parenting where there was no boundaries at all. So a healthy boundary is one where it is calm and anchored and connected. So, you know, there are a few basics. And then the other key piece is looking at your own triggers. When you get angry, when you get upset, that is about you. A child is never responsible for your emotional well-being, ever, right? We are there to guide our children. So when you're getting angry and upset, then you need to take a moment and step outside and calm down, or you need to go talk to someone about your anger, or you need to, you know, lean into yourself and go, what's here for me? Because, you know, I'm having a big reaction and my job here is to be that calm anchor for my beautiful kids.
What I really loved about that, and what I love about aware parenting, is that it's not just, it's about the kid and how we treat the kid and how we parent the kid, but it's really that self-reflection as well. And I think that is so different to a lot of what are in the books or in the, you know, the podcasts or the resources. And I think for dads, that's really imperative, is that that self-reflection, because as you say, like a lot of us had that dominant authoritarian male figure, whether that was a father or a stepfather or whoever it was within our family context. And when that's the model for a dad, that can be, how do you reconcile that with, you know, because I think a lot of dads do experience this desire to be more tender and gentle and loving, and a lot of those classically sort of feminine qualities, I think dads are wanting to do more of that. So I love that part of aware parenting that brings in that self-reflection and that self-parenting. I think that's so important.
And I love that you brought that up, because you cannot do one without the other. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I think a lot of the advice that's been out there for a long time is do this technique and then do this with your child and then you'll get them to cooperate this way. And I'm like, where are the parents in this story? Right. Yeah. Because we can't just do all this stuff with our kids if we are losing it and yelling, if we are not looking at our own stuff. Cause here's my theory, right? We have these beautiful children and they come along and they go, Mom, Dad, here's all your baggage. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to push up against you and I'm going to push the buttons that activate that baggage, because I actually need you to heal that and deal with that. Cause otherwise you're going to place that unconsciously on my shoulders. And I don't want that, cause I just want to be free to be who I need to be. So I'm going to push up against you in the places that feel the most uncomfortable, because there's an invitation for you to do your own work. And this is how we evolve as a human race. We get better, we get far more aware, we get a lot more conscious, because if we are willing to do the work, then we're not placing those same baggages and unconscious stories on our kids. And then our kids are free to be who they need to be, which means they're more connected to themselves. They trust their intuition more. They follow their passions. They are kinder. They're not carrying these other expectations forward with them. You know, raising children isn't about, I need you to be the best human so I can prove that I've been a good parent. Like, it's not that at all. It's like, I need to set you free to be an amazing human in the world, but I'm going to guide you around what is okay and what is not. I'm going to teach you about respect and boundaries, and I'm going to teach you about love and compassion. I'm going to teach you all these beautiful things by modeling it. And that's, our children learn by watching. How you treat your partner is so important in what sets up in children and their belief systems around relationship. You know, going back to what I said earlier about my husband doing that beautiful surprise me on our anniversary, one of my kids texted us and said, you know, happy anniversary, guys. Thank you for modeling to me what really healthy, intimate relationships look like, which means I will never settle for anything less than that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, we've done our job, right? Because she won't put up with crap, and she won't put up with a toxic relationship, because she's like, no, that's not what it looks like. And so I think the way we talk to our partners, the way we talk about ourselves, the way we model what we do with our own anger or our sadness, our relationships to making mistakes and failures, like, our children are constantly watching. I mean, it's a lot of pressure, right? It's a lot of pressure, but it's an invitation to be a better human. Like, that's it, you know, like, be the human you want your kids to be. Right. And so they can't be what they can't see. So, you know, how are we turning up in the world? And I think that's what it asks you. And I think that's why it's really important always is that when we're losing our shit all the time and when we are yelling or we're, you know, berating our partner, like, we have to pause and go, what is going on for me here? Mm. Right? Whenever we're projecting it onto someone else, we are avoiding what is sitting there for us. And that's confronting work. I know it's confronting work, and I know not everybody wants to do it. But if you want to have a healthy relationship with your children and you want your children to grow up to be amazing, exceptional humans with wonderful, robust mental health, then it starts with us looking at our own kind of crap.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that focus on being a better human and how you're turning up into the world, because before everything else, before parent or partner or whatever other, you know, accountant or whatever it is, you are a human being, you know, and yes, that is what they see first. And maybe it's helpful for some parents to focus on that, because the word parent has so much baggage and weight based on their own experiences. So I really like that focus on who are you as a human being, and how you're showing up. I think that's such a great starting place. So last December you released your first book, which is so exciting. Hopefully many more to come. And you titled it Raising Resilient and Compassionate Children. And I love that sort of, you know, resilient has this idea of being strong and unbreakable and, you know, unmoving. And then you pair it with compassionate, which has a lot of that softness and outward looking. And whereas resilience tends to have a bit of that inward looking emphasis. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about, what does a resilient and compassionate child look like? What does that look like in our children? And then how do we help our children get there?
Well, it's great, isn't it? The word resilient, and I'm glad you brought that up, often has a whole lot of connotations with that. And particularly here in Australia, I think for a long time, we've thought resilient is our ability to kind of toughen up and stick it out and have grit and, you know, get on with it, right? And we're so big in our Australian culture of just kind of suck it up and move on. Something bad happens, don't worry. And we reward people for being stoic and for being, you know, this like, yeah, I can deal with anything, right? But that's actually not resilient. That's often a lot of repression going on, and then that usually comes out in other places. Resilience is our ability to navigate something hard, feel the feelings connected to whatever's going on with that hardness. I believe ask for support and help, and then feel it and then let it go. So resilience is not getting picked in the basketball team and feeling all those big feelings connected to it, crying, feeling it doesn't feel fair, talking to someone who feels safe around it, processing it, feeling all that's connected to it, and then being able to sit in possibility of, oh, well, you know what, maybe actually I should train a bit more. And as I train a bit more, maybe I'll get a bit better, and then maybe I get picked in the team next time and we move on. As opposed to being stuck in a story that says, I'm not good enough, I'm never going to make anything, and then we stay stuck in that loop. So resilience is our ability to navigate hard stuff and feel what's connected with it. And we speak about that a lot in the book, because the book is a lot about how we navigate feelings, like what we've talked about here. And so much of our job as a parent is to make it safe enough for our kids to feel what they want to feel. Now, again, if we come back to our own upbringings, is most of us were not allowed to feel what we wanted to feel. You know, if we didn't get picked in the basketball team, we'll be like, it's fine, don't worry, try out again next time, or toughen up, or, you know, whatever, get over it. Or, you know, we probably would have learned pretty quickly to maybe not even share it, to repress those feelings around it, or whatever. Or maybe we sulked and sat in it for a long time, and then someone got angry with us because we didn't actually feel heard in it. I mean, there's many, many different, you know, ways that we navigate stuff, but really what it is it's making it safe enough for our children to feel the hard things. And the way that they learn to feel the hard things is knowing that our parent can handle the hard things, which means we can sit in the fire with them, and we're not freaking out, and we're not trying to fix it, and we're not judging. We're just sitting there going, this is really tricky. And I believe in your ability to find your way through this, and tell me more. And I love you just the way you are, whether you're picked in the basketball team or not. And yeah, it sucks that you didn't get in, and it's really hard. But I promise you, if you feel it and you navigate it, then this will be something that will actually be really powerful for you as a human moving forward. That's resilience, right? And that's what we what we need to teach. And, you know, one of my biggest things that grates me a bit, and I think it's why maybe I built a school, which was a bit of an extreme thing. It's not the only reason. But one of the reasons why I built a school is because our schooling system is all about be resilient, but it doesn't allow children really actually to take risks and feel how they need to feel. They're still wanting everyone to be compliant. We want you to be creative and take risks, but as long as it fits into this agenda here and as long as you sit still while you're doing it, right? We don't actually give children the space to feel and to be and to explore and to make mistakes. You know, we still make it wrong. Mm. And that's the whole punitive measures that, you know, that's the whole punitive discipline spectrum that we're kind of living in still. Mm. So I think resilience is, again, coming back to our ability to navigate the tricky stuff. And then if we look at compassionate, you know, compassion is, for me, the number one thing that we need to learn in order to be a loving human, mainly to ourselves, because compassion is all about being able to sit in a place that is of deep acceptance. Now, most of us, when I work with adults who are, you know, really struggling with guilt, or they're like, oh, I'm a crap parent because I did this or messed that up, or, you know, they're really hard on themselves, because a lot of us have learned to be really hard on ourselves. Mm. Then I often say the way through is not to be harder. The way through is to have compassion. Mm. And people are like, I don't even know what compassion is. And I'm like, compassion is actually being kind to yourself and saying, I did the best job I could at the time. Mm. Or compassion is like, yeah, I'm really sad that it didn't get to work out the way I wanted it to, but I'm going to be kind to myself instead of berate myself or beat myself up. And when we learn to have compassion with ourselves for all the places we make mistakes or we failed or we messed up, when we learn to be compassionate with ourselves, then we learn to be compassionate with everyone else, right? Yeah. Yeah. We can't be compassionate with everyone else unless it involves ourselves. And so again, the whole framework of when we're looking at resilient and compassionate children, when we come back to what Marion and I talk about a lot in the book, which is about holding space for feelings, learning to have how to have healthy boundaries, all of that contributes to a child feeling that empathy and compassion from a parent. So even in their hardest, most, you know, ugly moment, right? When a child's like, I hate you, you're the worst dad in the world, or they're like, you know, they're just having a moment. And we want to take that of like, how dare you say that and how disrespectful. What a child's asking in that moment is, do you still love me when I'm bringing you my most messy self? Mm-hmm. And if we can look through the eyes of compassion in that moment and go, oof, you are having a hard time, because they are big words, and I'm seeing that you are hurting. And it's so important to know that we only speak like that and only hurt others when we're hurting ourselves. So when we're seeing an angry child in front of us saying, I hate you and you're the worst dad in the world, then that is a child that is hurting. And what they're really saying is, I don't actually have the words to tell you how big my hurt is right now. So I'm trying to show you in the easiest way I can, which is by saying these mean things. And if we can stand there really anchored and just be like, you're having a hard time, I get it. And you say you hate me, but you know what? I still love you. I still love you even when you hate me. Now, it doesn't mean that you're allowed to hit your brother in the head. I'm not willing for you to do that. And I am going to set a limit. It's not okay to ride your bike off the roof into the pool. But I am here, and I'm going to love you even in your messiest places. Now, when a child feels that, that basically embeds in them, I am worthy of being loved even in my messy places. And then that creates the enoughness. And then that enoughness basically creates the ability to have deep compassion for ourselves and for others.
Yeah.
So we need these children to go out into the world to be resilient, which means they can handle big things, but they look through the lens of compassion, which means then we don't bully other humans and we don't do harmful things to animals and the planet, because we come from a place of compassion and kindness and from our hearts. Mm. Like that's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. The not making the basketball team example, that hit a bit close to home, because I didn't make the basketball team when I was younger, and I didn't have someone speak those things to me. Then, so when you were talking, I was like, oh.
I needed that, Tori. Well, my equivalent was not being picked in the dance troupe. Yeah. I was devastated, and I was like, "Band." So it was hard. Yeah, we all have those stories, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That example of, you know, your kids saying, well, "You're horrible dad, I hate you, you know, you're a bad dad. And that awareness of looking beneath and beyond the behavior, as you illustrated, it reminded me, I've learned this years ago in university, that compassion, the root word, means to suffer with and to sit with that other person's suffering. And I think that's where we're able to bring that empathy and that love and that kindness and that openness is for ourselves and for others, is to actually sit and, again, like, we all have our traumas. And if we can sit in that space of, I'm not alone, then it's a lot easier to show that love to self and to others. It's beautiful.
Totally.
Mm. You know, across your whole professional career of working with families and children and parents, I imagine you've seen that change in our society of the expectations on dads, and even the expectations that dads themselves hold for fathering. I wonder if, how have you seen fathering and dads, you know, sort of the image of a dad change throughout your time working with families?
It makes me laugh and think about when I worked in birth, that like maybe like 15 years ago, and when it became kind of pretty cool to baby wear, right? And so all these dads are out with their pouches wearing their babies.
Yep.
And everyone's like, oh my God, look at that hot dad with the baby. And I was like, what? That's just become sexy. Look, I must admit, what has been beautiful to see, perhaps in the 20 years I've been working in this space, is the involvement of fathers right from the beginning of, yeah, you know, birth, prenatally, to being at the birth and being really present and being that beautiful support, to understanding a little bit more postnatally what a mother and baby need and how we hold that. You know, it's beautiful to see that, you know, a lot of men stepping up to be in that space, because it's, you know, it's a team effort doing it together. And so that's very beautiful to see. I also love that we're having way more conversations about feelings and emotions. You know, I love that is a conversation far more men are having and they're feeling into, and that is, you know, that is again what we need. And that, and when men can own that, then again, they're more willing to, and often more open to their children and particularly their sons feeling those feelings. And that's again where we change that. So I definitely see that we are evolving and moving forward, and that there is more empathy and compassion for the roles, both the roles we take. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think for a long time, you know, I absolutely get that, you know, women carry, particularly in those early years, they carry a lot of the load, you know, in birth, giving birth and breastfeeding and all the kind of duties that often happen to women. And I love that there's a lot more understanding and compassion around that now.
Yeah.
And that we're also seeing for men, it's also a big transition for you guys. There's a whole pressure in work and I've got to keep it together, and that you're allowed to have feelings around that as well. So I feel like it's been beautiful to see the conversation open up in a whole new way, and that there's more support now, that it's, that there's many different men's and dad's groups that I've had connections with that all come together to talk and share and feel. And I'm like, ah, oh, this is the gold, right?
Yeah.
This is the gold, because the more that we all change the narrative around it, then the more that we're going to shift, you know, from that really, I guess, shut down authoritarian male essence that has been there for a long time, which is what's been revered and has been seen as successful, as opposed to, actually, that's not a successful man. A successful man is one who can feel deeply, who can listen well, who knows their purpose and you know, is takes great pride in doing that and supporting their family or who they are, and, you know, wants to be there of service to mankind as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's where we need to change the narrative around what success is. And I feel hopeful that I see a lot more of that popping up.
That's beautiful. You answered all of my follow-up questions. So if we could finish on a bit of a fun thought experiment, I guess. But imagine that you and your husband get to go into a time machine back to the birth of your son. What would you tell yourself and your husband at that time, at the birth of your son, about everything that's about to happen? What advice would you give yourselves? What would you tell yourselves maybe to let go of or be a bit more forgiving of yourselves. What advice would you give to your past pre-parents, or, you know, just as you become a parent self?
An hour. No, I'll keep it succinct. Wow, it's good. You know, I actually have thought about this often. I sometimes get asked this question because, and I come back with so much compassion for the younger version of us when we first had our son. We were so young and so naive. Yeah, what I come back to is this, is I would say don't compete with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a team. Mm-hmm. Don't play the game who's doing it tougher, because no one wins. You both have needs. And how do we all get our needs met here? Because that's going to serve our son. Mm-hmm. So I would say that. I would say yes to all the support, like welcome it. You don't have to do it on your own. Like, say yes to the village, even though the village didn't really exist, but it's there somewhere. You just have to sometimes go find it. Say yes to the support. I would say lean in and support each other to deal with your shadow. You know, look at your stuff. And sometimes that only comes up as your children grow and as you grow. But don't be afraid to do that, because there is only gold to be found there within that. And I would say children are pretty robust. So, you know, you're going to mess up things, but it's, you know, it's hard to break them. So don't worry. Don't worry if the baby accidentally falls off rolls off the thing. Like, it'll be okay. And by the time you have a third child, you're like, are they bleeding? No, they're fine. Right. So my poor third child, she's so robust. We're like, oh yeah, whatever. They're pretty tough. What else would I say? Such a beautiful question.
Would you do anything differently?
Just get more support. You know, I think, look, I was 25, my husband was 28 when we had our son. So we were so naive, like, oh my, we didn't even have friends that had babies. So we were like, yeah, this is fun. This will be fine. And I was trying to run a business at the time. So was he. Like, it was crazy, but I actually look back and go, I wouldn't change any of it, because it actually shaped us to be where we need to be today. The thing I would do differently is get support, because we didn't have enough support and we both didn't have enough self-care. And so then we competed against each other to try and get that, and that didn't go well. And that's often where we came up against each other. When we were both not getting our needs met, that's where the fighting would happen.
Yeah.
And so I would say if we actually lent into more support and kept having that question, what do you need? What do you need? And knowing that we were both worthy of self-care or time out or to catch up with friends, and it made us both be better parents when we took care of our own needs. Yeah. And that's what I would definitely do different. Yet, you know, in hindsight, you look back and you see the beauty of the contrast of what happened, so that you do something different and you learn and you grow. And so, you know, as much as it was challenging, I see the absolute perfection of all of it, that it's brought us to this place now.
Yeah. So cool. Oh, Lal, thank you so much for your time today. It's just been incredible. And the way you've unpacked all of that, like, there was some like heavy content there, and you've just made it so clear and so understandable to me. So hopefully to our audience as well. I'll give you a chance to plug yourself. If any dads or families listening to this want to continue to follow you, where can they find you?
So you can find me, I always joke and say this, there's actually only one Lael Stone in the world, or on Google at the moment, according to Google. So if you search Lael Stone, then you find me. So on my website, I've got like free resources. I've got all the podcasts that I've been on. I've got online courses that you can do. So there's webinars, and then there's, you know, I run these 8-week immersions, you know, which are really about looking at your own imprints and stories and how that turns up in parenting. And have lots of couples do that together or separately on their own. Our book's on there as well, so you can find our book there, or you can search it on Amazon. And I think there's a link to my school there too, which is Woodlawn Primary, if anyone's curious about that. It's in Victoria though. So and I'm on socials at Lael Stone, so you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and all around.
Thank you so much, Lael. Appreciate it so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.